You're on RN and this is Future Tense with Anthony Fennell. Also available online and via iTunes. Our Twitter name is RN Future Tense, all one word. And we broadcast across the Asia Pacific region via Radio Australia.
Now to language and technology, and indeed the language of our new technologies. It's always seemed to me a bit odd when people criticise Twitter because of the 140 character limit. I'm sure there are lots of things you could criticise Twitter for, but to suggest, as some people like to do, that a tweet isn't real communication simply because it's so brief is a bit like suggesting that haiku isn't poetry just because it's over almost before it gets started. The point is that for millennia, people have worked themselves up about changes to the language, and in the online era, things are no different. Which brings us to Tom Chatfield and his book about language in the digital age. It's called Netymology, and he joined me recently from the UK for this interview. Well, Tom Chatfield, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Great pleasure to be with you.
What made you decide to write a book about technology and language at this particular moment in time?
I've been fascinated by both of these things all my life, but particularly with technology, I think people often don't consider what lies beneath the kind of smooth, beautiful, polished surfaces of the world they're using. It's easy to get into the frame of mind that sort of technologies from iPhones to tablets to computers just kind of popped into existence, perfect and complete. And I felt, you know, that right now, by telling the stories behind a lot of words and new ideas, you can restore to people a sense of the sort of contingent, messy human history that went into making these things. And you can sort of lead people to think about technology as something that people make and make up and make mistakes with, rather than what it can often feel like, which is a sort of inevitable part of nature that you just have to put up with and use or reject, but that you can't criticize or actually understand.
And a lot of people do criticise new words, particularly new words relating to technology, don't they? But I know I noticed that the subtitle of your book is A Linguistic Celebration of the Digital World. So they're okay as far as you're concerned.
Well, not everything's okay, but for me, it doesn't make sense to start deploring language. And when people are criticising, I think often they're not really having a go at language. They're giving vent to other feelings. So people talk about text messages, for example, and they say that, you know, using things like lol, LOL, to laughing out loud is dreadful and is a reduction of language and is turning people into idiots. And I think, you know, that's much too simple an account because, you know, on the one hand, the unthinking use of language, the use of language where it is using you, that is never a good thing. But if you're prepared to try and understand what's going on with something like a little tiny text message, the level of self-dramatization and performance going on there, the amount that's taking place in those three letters, is quite astonishing. And it's much more interesting to treat it as a window into understanding the present. So when someone says, lol, when they type that in a text message laughing out loud, they're writing a kind of stage direction for themselves as, you know, a dramatic character in a little play. And it's an appeal to a very sophisticated code of self-dramatization and reference. And that, you know, it can be a very powerful thing. It can be a very good thing. It's something that I think is worthy of understanding rather than dismissing. If we want to try and, you know, use language better, if we want to try and know what is actually going on, because we're so good with words that we often just put together a world from them without sort of reading between the gaps. And learning to read critically is incredibly important in an age when you have billions and billions of words being exchanged on screen, and you have to sort of infer the people behind them and work out, you know, from the language what's actually going on in the real world.
Is the playfulness of many of the technology terms that are with us today and some of the words that have come in through social media, lol being a case in point, is it that playfulness or that apparent almost flippancy that irritates some people, do you think?
I think it is. I think people get worried that there's a constant state of kind of irony and lack of seriousness online. And I can see where that's coming from because everything is very, very self-referential, you know, and also it refers to itself, you know, and builds up. So we have laughing out loud, and then we have rolling on the floor, laughing out loud, and then we have sort of rolling on the floor, laughing my ass off, and then we have these kind of Baroque variations. And it's easy to see it as kind of sound and fury, signifying nothing. But for me, that's only looking at one half of the question. So it's very easy to get irritated about that. But we have, I think, some rather wonderful innovations going on. If you just look at something as simple as the emoticon, which is, you know, a little smiley face drawn with a colon, a dash, and one bit of a bracket. Now, this came out of a discussion in a very early kind of proto-internet in the early 1970s, when a bunch of academics were exchanging sort of jokey messages about what would happen if you had an incident in an elevator with a drop of mercury. And someone said to them, you've got to watch out here, guys, because if someone came along who hadn't been following your discussion and just read one of these posts, they'd think there was a disaster going on. So what you need to do is come up with a concise, typed way of expressing amusement. And they suggested all sorts of different symbols. And a guy called Scott Farman eventually came up with the idea of drawing in type a little smiley face. And that's a tiny thing. But for me, it partly shows that what people are trying to do is not be flippant, but they're trying to build into typed speech on a screen the sort of full gamut of emotions that you get when you are hearing someone's voice or seeing someone's face. You're trying to make language do more and more. It's why you get so many exclamation marks, so many new words. There's a lovely new word, meh, M-E-H, which is three letters that signal total indifference. It may or may not have its origins in Yiddish, in an older Yiddish term called mneh, but it's a kind of verbal shrug. And these new registers are needed for on-screen words to do more and more work in the world, to act like human faces and human voices, and convey that new gamut of emotions that we really haven't had to use before screens came along with these rather miraculous properties that screens have.
So even though some of the new words and terms that we use seem quite simple, they are actually quite complex. They have quite a complex role within our language system.
Well, that's exactly right. And you take even a very simple word like wiki is in Wikipedia, the encyclopedia that everyone uses. The word wiki is from Hawaiian, in fact. And so Wikipedia literally means sort of quick education. But it came about because the guy who came up with all the wiki websites, wiki is a class of website, Wikipedia is just one of them, was back in the 90s in Hawaii at an airport. And he saw that the bus was called the Wiki Wiki Bus, the quick bus. And he was looking for a word that sort of sounded and felt quick to go with this very new kind of website that he wanted to come up with for programmers to share and edit information. And he decided to call his first website WikiWikiWeb. And that's a silly little story. But the moment I tell that, it goes from being a kind of made-up word without places or faces behind it to being a specific story about one man who's still alive, who we can ask questions, doing very particular things, you know, in the late 1990s. And that's where this particular tool came from. That's how it was born. And that's why, you know, we have this, we're all speaking a little bit of Hawaiian without even knowing it.
Imigating
all say. Hey, what are you guys doing? Talking behind my back?
Nobody's talking behind your back. That's pig Latin.
Sure, anybody can understand it. It's very simple.
Well, I can't, and I'm simple.
Oh, a wise guy, eh?
You know, if you take a long look at human history, reading and writing have been, you know, very, very costly things that only a tiny fraction of the world's population have had access to. And there were far fewer people in the past than there are now. And according to UNESCO, it's only in the last, in a sort of 75 years or so, that the world even hit 50% adult literacy. And yet now, you know, suddenly, in the matter of a few decades, we have, you know, more than 6 billion mobile phones in the world, more than 2 billion internet-connected computers. And so suddenly the majority of human beings are playing some kind of active part in written culture. They're participating, if you like, as authors in a very small way. And so we have this overwhelming amount of data. And so the story of language is very much becoming a story of data and not a story of a small number of people sifting, sorting, and recording and trying to keep some kind of record. You know, we can reflect the world live. And this is very profound for me. I like to think of, you know, the internet, or, you know, that all the services connected through the internet as a kind of eternally unfinished collaboration, pooling the words of millions and millions of people. And this partly means that something that was always implicit has become explicit, which is that language doesn't belong to us. Language is something we build together. You can't make up the meaning of words on your own. The words are something sort of flowing through us. You look on Twitter, you look at memes. People often are just passing on words and echoing others' words. And so I think, you know, we're forced to realize that this kind of massive collaboration is not something we can stop, it's not something we can freeze, it's not something we can be definitive about. It is a sort of constant negotiation in which you either are prepared to accept that negotiation or you try and sort of carve out your little corner, but you can't opt out and you can't speak on somebody else's behalf and say, you know, definitively, I'm right and you're wrong, full stop.
Just following on from that point, it is a rather unique time in which we live, isn't it? That we are, or most of us, many of us, are authors as well as the audience.
Well, that's absolutely right, yes. And there's one thing, you know, authors and politicians have known for a long time that is a very dangerous situation. You don't own your words after you've said them or written them on Twitter. You know, they can be used against you, quoted indefinitely. In some ways, that's why I'm so interested in writing now about the importance of thinking more about language, about understanding it, about understanding some of the ways that language does far, far more than you think it does. We're so good with language. That's the thing. We have such extravagant gifts. Let's say that I'm sending a tweet a day talking about my life and having a sandwich or something like that, and my friends are reading it. Now, over time, they won't remember that they've been reading one tweet a day. I'll see them in 6 months, and they will have woven those little updates into a story of my life, you know, with pictures, with images, with ideas. They will have built so much more off those words. And that's going on all the time. So we have to be very cautious. I think we have to really try and pause and understand these mechanics. And of course, we're seeing now all kinds of crazy legal cases in the UK and elsewhere about people. You know, we had a case in the UK where someone tweeted a joke in frustration at an airport. It was clearly a joke. He said, I'm going to blow this airport up if it hasn't got its stuff together in a week, to paraphrase. And that went all the way to the British High Court. They called it the Twitter joke trial, and he was eventually let off. But, you know, careless words rule around us, and yet these words are active agents in the world. They can have huge weight.
Well, Tom Chatfield, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Great pleasure.